Today I'm in Chippenham with Vivian Fuller, who's agreed to see me. So the first question, Vivian, is when and where did we first meet?
Well, when I saw this question, I thought, actually, I can't remember. I've been in Chippenham Deanery for 8 years, and I don't think you've been here that long, so I'm assuming I met you when you first came.
Although I've been here 10 years.
Oh, have you? Oh, right. Well, there you go.
So I think we might have met at Simon Tyndall's house.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was on the deanery leadership team for quite a while. And then I wasn't.
Oh, I must have met you there then. I'm so sorry, I don't remember.
It's a long time ago. I think not long after you arrived.
Yeah, so Simon enticed me into the job, which I haven't regretted.
Do you drink tea?
I do, but not a terrific amount. I have a cup of tea first thing in the morning, and I may have another one during the day, but not very often.
So do you have a favourite cup of tea?
Yeah, I like Earl Grey. But the first one in the morning has to be just builder's tea.
And do you have your Earl Grey with or without milk?
With, but no sugar.
Mm-hmm. That's the big question for Earl Grey. I need to find out a bit more. The rumours are that the Queen has Earl Grey with milk.
Right.
But so it's kind of the milk versus lemon in Earl Grey debate, you see.
Right, yes, I know. I think lemon is quite nice in an ordinary weak cup of builder's tea, but in Earl Grey, which is so fragrant anyway, I don't think you need it.
No. So the question for everybody is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I don't think either is true. I think it's struggling hugely, certainly in my experience. The churches are obsessed with their buildings, or they're encouraged to be obsessed with their buildings, and they're very focused on the community which meets in that building, whether it's on a Sunday or during the week. And you know, in our church there's a thriving midweek service for people who find Sundays difficult, or the time that the midweek one is better for them. But that's kind of it. That's their focus. So they're struggling because they're so old. They're struggling to look after one another, and the thought of mission or outreach, which both words I think they find completely terrifying, doesn't really come into it. But if you put them into a situation which they don't think is either mission or outreach, they'll do it naturally.
I'm going to ask about the Wednesday congregation, because we have a Wednesday service, so I've never been able to come along to the Wednesday service here. So how many people do you have at your Wednesdays normally?
Well, this morning, I've just been up there for a little meeting afterwards. This morning, there must have been 50 people there, and they're all elderly. And they meet for worship, but the really important part of it for them, in addition to that, is the tea and the chat afterwards, which is carefully laid out with tables and tablecloths and biscuits and milk in jugs and sugar in bowls. And they have a lovely fellowship time, which is very important to them. And it might be for some of them the only time that they have to share, to chat, to talk to people during the week.
So is the service part, is that, how long is that normally?
Depends who's running it, Janet.
Okay.
It can be an hour and 10 minutes, or it can be 45 minutes, depending on the length of the sermon.
Okay. And do you pick up a sense from Do people like shorter in that setting, do you think?
Yes, for lots of reasons. One is attention span. One is that I think it's not difficult to get a strong message across in a very simple way, and I think people are much more likely to remember that. If you're trying to overcomplicate things, you're less likely to get anything remembered.
Because our midweek services are very short. They are half an hour because we don't have any hymns and we use standard Book of Common Prayer Communion. So they are half an hour of service and then half an hour of tea and cake.
Oh, right. Oh, no, at St Peter's they make it last all morning. And I think that's choice. They like their hymns, their old hymns, nothing modern. And they have an organist who's part of the congregation who gives her time for free. So it's a big part of her giving as well. So they will have four hymns, possibly five. And they enjoy it. And it's a communion service, not Book of Common Prayer, it's common worship, and but in a very traditional form.
Mm. The Baptist Church in Corsham also have a midweek service now for old people, and it seems to be a thing which I think people are finding fits well into how church works. I think that's one of the things that I'm very interested in, is about Sunday versus other days worship.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think we're too fixated on a Sunday. Sundays are very busy days, and if you're then going to move from older people into families with children, weekends are hugely busy. So finding time for coming to church, you know, at 9:30 or 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning might not fit with many people at all.
So we're going to move on to the specialist questions now. You are still deanery secretary, aren't you?
Yes, after 8 years.
Yes.
And three area deans.
Yes. You are the stability in the deanery.
Well, I don't think I'd go that far, but I've been there a while.
So I wanted to ask you this question because the deanery is a funny structure as far as I'm concerned. So what role do you think the deanery... I've written, what role do you think the deanery does? What role does the deanery have, I guess? And what role could it play in the current Church of England structures?
Well, this is a difficult one, really, because I've seen two different roles that the deanery has played. The deanery at the moment plays the role of providing a forum for... strategies and ideas to be presented to the deanery reps, and also a forum for good practice for our local parishes to share a little of what they've been doing, and in quite an informal way, and we encourage questions and conversations. So it's not a question of being lectured, it's more a sharing, which is good. But previously, before it was reorganised, we had much more autonomy. There was a level of decision making that the deanery was delegated by the diocese. There was more choice in how clergy were deployed and parish share, but that was all taken back to the diocese. No real, as far as I was concerned, no real explanation as to why that happened. So in answer to your question, what could it do? It seems to be flexible.
I mean, we do have a deanery post still, don't we, of the deanery youth and children's outreach worker.
Yes, we do. I mean, the deanery missioner is the term that's for children and families. And that, in my opinion, was one of the best decisions that ever came out of the time that we had when we were allowed to choose how, or advise how, clergy were deployed. And it's been enormously successful. It took a while to fill because it's kind of fairly specialist. But Adam, who's picked up the role, is very good and enthusiastic about it. And in my opinion, that's the way to go with it when it comes to deployment, is to choose how we could focus on various roles more than just providing clergy to take standard services. That we could focus more on maybe using the money rather than for a clergy post to have youth worker posts, to have pioneer ministers, which was part of the plan until the money ran out.
I think Adam's done a really good job across the deanery, and I'm going with the deanery group to Soul Survivor with them, and I think that's really good, especially for the more rural parts of the deanery where there's not really critical mass. We've got five teenagers coming from our benefice, but it's good for them that they'll be able to meet with other local ones. So
yes, he's got another initiative that he runs in Chippenham itself, and buses the youth in from the outlying parishes and on a fairly regular basis for a much more modern worship, and that's really good organisation for villages that might have only two or three young people.
Ours come into that. They've really enjoyed it. It's been great for them. The next question, I'm intrigued by this. What are the most important things you feel that you learnt from spending time living abroad?
I loved this period of our lives. I think we've been very lucky. My husband's a civil servant and he works for the Ministry of Defence. And he was lucky enough to be offered posts abroad. So we've had two periods of time abroad, one in Cyprus and one in Canada. Quite different in when we went to Cyprus, we lived in a quarter, in a compound run by the British Army, very efficient, felt very cared for, and a completely wonderful lifestyle. I absolutely loved it. When you're abroad, when the Brits abroad, they're a funny race, really, because they provide a little nest. This is my experience anyway. And certainly the British Army or the forces aboard provide this little security nest, which is a great social life and support system, hospitals, doctors, the lot. So there was not much mixing with the locals unless you chose to. And it was part of Nigel's job to mix with quite a lot of the locals and the area authority that he ran. So we did do a lot of socialising with them. So, I mean, you learn about different cultures, you learn different ways of life, and I loved it. My son was born in Cyprus and my daughter was three. So, I mean, they were quite young children, so they didn't really experience much of that, apart from the fact that their father came home in the middle of the afternoon because the hours were so great. The second time we went abroad, the children were a bit older, and we went to Canada, which the climate considerably different. And also we didn't live in a quarter, so we lived amongst the Canadians. So that was great as well. It was just a totally different experience. And although they speak the same language, they are actually very different, the North Americans, the Canadians. So you have to learn patience, you have to learn their ways of doing things, because they might not be our ways of doing things, but you're living in their country, so you respect that. But again, had a great time, learned how to ski, learned how to quilt, learned how to play mahjong. Honestly, the life of the spouse, of the working person, in the Brits abroad is quite good. My children loved going to school there. They absolutely adored it. In fact, my son, who was 8 when we left, when he was 18, did a gap year in Canada learning how to be a ski instructor, that he loved it so much.
We've got some friends that have been away on a posting and have come back, and they found the transition back quite difficult. But I think they would just say that that's been really good for them.
I think the most difficult thing about coming back was having to reclaim your house that you've rented out. That was a bit difficult, but, you know, get over it.
The next question, if you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be? I think you might have a list.
I don't think the Church of England copes very well with change at all. I mean, there's lots of jokes about the word change and Church of England in the same sentence. There are some things that the Christian faith should not change at all. And it should be proud of the fact that it has fundamental principles and what it believes to be absolute truths, and not apologise for them. So that from that point of view, I don't think it should change anything at all. But it's to live in a multicultural society for Christians, I think they find that quite difficult. And from the point of view of change, of gosh, they have strategies, wonderful strategies about how new things are going to be done, but there's never any plan as to how those strategies are going to work out. This is my experience. Other people probably disagree. But and if there is a plan, there's no monitoring of how the steps on the plan might be working or not working. And certainly in my experience, some strategies have come down from the diocese and they get aired and ignored. And there's still a huge element of us and them, even though I know, because I'm also on the diocesan synod, that we try and make that we are the diocese. We are all of us together. But it's not viewed that way. It's very much the diocese telling you to do things, and either you do them or you don't. But there's no monitoring, there's no plan. And the other thing that I find difficult is collaborative ministry. I'm not sure that the Church of England actually trains their ministers in collaborative ministry, because it doesn't seem to work. And that's the way it's got to go.
I think there's some really interesting issues, and I stood up at once at Diocesan Synod, and the then Archdeacon and I had a bit of an argument about it in the questions, because at that point they were saying, we would like the area deans to be people who do this and do that and do this other thing and have this leadership. And I stood up and said, well, how are you going to do that? Are you going to appoint someone to be area dean? And he said, oh, no. And I said, but the appointment process for each parish is legally just for that parish. There is no guarantee that there will be somebody with the skills that are needed to be this area dean in any deanery, because we're not appointing someone with that role. And he couldn't come up with any answer to that at all, because of the way that the appointments are made.
Skill sets, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I think there are, you can, as a parish or a benefice or a group who are appointing someone, they will be appointing someone for whom they have made the best compromise about what they want, and where they will allow that person not to be the Archangel Gabriel, because you read these things through and you think, no one has those skills sometimes in adverts. But there doesn't still seem to be any acceptance that actually they're looking for someone who's impossible to get. And actually, which of those things can they provide support? to do the other to the other side of that.
But this is the thing, really, is that, that no one can be all things to all men. But if you work in a team, collaboratively, and you empower people with those skill sets that you don't have or would like, then you will achieve your aim, as long as everyone knows what your aim is and you're all working together. And the other little sort of thing I'd quite like the Anglican Church to do is, if it's going to have a set of rules and regulations, which it should have, I wish people would read them. And then, having read them, apply them. Because it's pointless without. I've had occasion to read rules and regulations when an incident has happened, and then been astonished that actually the Anglican Church doesn't follow those rules and regulations. And I find that quite upsetting, actually, that especially the Christian Church, which should be setting an example. I find that difficult.
We're going to go on to the roundup question now.
Right.
Which is, what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Right. I think I'm going to say travel, because I've had experience of living abroad, and I've had lots of holidays, and I really enjoy it. And now my husband's retired, and we've got to the stage where we look after a 3-year-old grandson, and his other set of grandparents are moving back to Chippenham, so we're going to be able to share the care of him while his parents work. So it's going to mean that Nigel and I have got much more opportunity for travel, so we've booked ourselves a few trips, and that's my favourite thing beginning with T.
That's great. Thank you ever so much for speaking to me today, Vivian.
Pleasure.